Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Lots to look forward to. Adam White's ready to go on a Tuesday morning. He loves it more than most, Tuesday. I can feel it in his bones, if I was feeling his bones. Whitey, good morning.
Good morning. I don't want to be a sensationalist, but I'm just a little bit nervous at the moment.
About what?
About the amount of rain that's fallen overnight.
Oh, that tiff-taff. The TikTok.
Oh, no, that's fine. That's in beautiful.
Is there
conditions.
Real concern?
Real sort of 27 mils overnight, just exactly what it needs after its first cut. So I'm not concerned about that
sure?
by any stretch of the imagination. But there has been, at this stage, 37 mils of rainfall at Warrnambool overnight.
Yes.
And there was over 117 mils of rainfall at Aries Inlet overnight.
117?
Yes. And the rain seems to be going a little bit in an easterly fashion, which is not normally the case. If you look at the radar, the rain's kind of come from the east, not from the west. So we'll obviously get the latest track information before 7.
What are you suggesting?
No, well, I hope...
What are you suggesting?
I certainly hope that the meeting goes ahead today, the first day of the Warrnambool Carnival. But, you know, you don't want the track too affected by the weather. Now, 37 mils overnight would suggest that that's going to be the case. And there's also day 2 and day 3 to come. So the weather is going to get better as the week goes on. But as I said, I just hope that the 37 mils that's fallen at Warrnambool, I think that was up until about 5:30, doesn't become 50 or 60 by 10 o'clock. That's all I'm saying.
So are you putting the day 1 action on notice?
Well, probably yes.
That'd be disappointing.
I'd be a bit nervous about that.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. It'll be maybe the pool at the Bull is coming through off the SMS. It'll be a quagmire at the Bull is another one that's just come through. It's going to be... It's not ideal. Now, there's many reasons... Well, not many, there's a couple of reasons why you go to the Bull around about this time. One's for the excellent racing carnival, which may or may not be affected by the state of the track in day one. Two is just to get away from everyone else and just hang out and drink some beers with your mates and spend some time on late nights just cavorting with friends and foe. And three is, no, that's about it. Just two. There's two reasons why you go. So those that are there for just the cavorting, they won't be too distressed, I wouldn't have thought, if there's a situation. But for the race club, on the back of the fact that we didn't get Warrnambool last year, didn't get the carnival last year because of the COVID situation, and we wish them the best, and we hope that all goes as well as possibly could be to the race club and all and sundry down there running the event for the next 3 days. Because last year was a bit of a blow, not only to the race club, but to the community, local Warrnambool community, and what they're reliant on upon is of this 3-day carnival. So hopefully everyone gets what they need out of this is what I would like.
Yes.
Through the next 3 days.
I agree. And I'm in agreement for a text that is coming where it says, I'm more concerned about a war against China is inevitable according to our military chief or a former head of the military. I must confess, when I listened to that driving in this morning, it sort of left me a little bit uneasy with life.
Are you suggesting that Major General Adam Finlay was talking to Australia's Special Forces soldiers last year, and he was talking about this?
Just was a little bit of a setback to driving in to...
Well, we're in a pretty good spot. Like, we're the other side of the country. Like, they're going to drop some bombs on us. They're going to fly a long way. We'll be right. We'll be right. We don't do that these days. It's not how it works these days. I've just put a virus in a computer system or something. That's the modern warfare.
It didn't sort of, yeah. Anyway.
I wouldn't be getting too bogged down by that. I'm not sure that's where we want to start the show with war with China.
No. So there's a millage update. So welcome on the text. We've had 38 mils in Bundalong in the past 24 hours. Now, I must confess, I don't really know where Bundalong is. Anyway, we'll see.
I love Bundalong. It's a magnificent place. It's near Yarrawonga.
Right, okay. I should know where that is.
You should know where that is.
I have a text that has just come in that there was a track inspection at 6 a.m. and it was a heavy 9. at Warrnambool. So as I said, we'll speak to the track manager in just over half an hour from now and get a much better understanding of how it's all going. And hopefully most of the rain has come and gone. That's the case in the city, but of course Warrnambool's 4 hours away. And I'm just a bit concerned about the direction of where the rain has been heading. But Warrnambool kind of gets different weather to Melbourne. So anyway, we'll get to that when we get to it.
Found a house yesterday.
Did you?
Yeah. I think I might move.
Whereabouts to?
To Camperdown.
Camperdown?
Yep.
Right.
Beautiful old homestead.
That's home of the shark.
Who? Which one? The Michael Sharky Shark?
No, the quiz shark.
There's only one shark.
The quiz shark is the home of Camperdown.
Is that right? Or Camperdown's the home of the quiz shark. I don't know how it came across. In fact, it came across, I was surfing one of the newspaper sites, and it was just popped up as this real estate feature. My goodness. One day I'm going to have the courage to do that, just take off.
And just a tree change.
Yeah, I'm going to do that one day. When the kids get out of school, I'm off. It's going to be a long drive to work, but I'll be fine. I'll find a way to make it happen. But my God, it's a beautiful estate. 117 acres, beautiful old homestead that's been renovated. Looks like a nice place. On the lake there. One of the words I can't pronounce, the name of the lake. Not too far from the Bull. Just head to the Bull whenever I need to.
Well, you've got family heritage down in that area.
Well, we do. We do. In fact, the estate in Terang is for sale. I saw that the other day too. The homestead in Terang, where we used to holiday at Christmas holidays with Mum's family. All of us, thousands of us, would descend upon this house. This big old school manor mansion that my grandfather's friend used to own. We'd go there, and I saw it's for sale. Right. It's for sale, and it has been renovated a touch because it needed to. This house had a ballroom. That's how big it was. When we stayed there, there was a room on the end of the house, which was a ballroom. We used to play indoor cricket there. It was the best ever. It was so good. Because you're there in summer, and the test is on, all that sort of stuff, and everyone would get involved in the big games of cricket. But you played inside in this massive big ballroom. It was so much fun.
Right.
That's how big this house was.
Right, so there you go.
Old school. So anyway, I'm moving to Camperdown. So if you're in the area, let me know where's a good coffee shop, because I'm going to need it. Would you like to be in Camperdown or Mumbai at the moment, if you're playing in the IPL?
Yes. So problems are plenty there, particularly if you're a Kolkata Knight Rider, because they've had two players that have tested positive to coronavirus, and as a result of that, they've all been sort of locked down in severe hotel quarantine. My understanding is that they're okay and they're feeling okay about things, that they think they've kind of got it under control and that things will work out okay. But the reality is it's not just the Kolkata Knight Riders, because two members of the staff of the Super Kings have also picked up the virus. So it's not the players, but members of the... It might have been a physio or some sort of team manager or something like that. And then there's also some ground staff at Delhi that have picked it up as well. So what was seen as being a situation where they're all going to be sort of quarantined away from the virus, for want of a better term, it has seeped in. So that has to be a concern to tournament organisers.
It's becoming more and more of a challenge, it seems, to get through the IPL season. Not only because of the virus itself, but even just the sentiment. I'm not sure what it's like in India itself, but outside, the world is almost, and we talked about this last week a little bit, the world is almost frowning upon the fact that it's going ahead, this tournament. But I'm not sure what the temperature's like in India for it, and whether or not there is concern from the general public about what the hell's going on here, why are we playing cricket. I haven't got to the bottom of that just yet. But there is seemingly more and more concern from outside of India about why the hell this is happening in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I still think inside India they're reasonably comfortable about it all because of all the reasons we discussed last week. I think one of the things that I'm uncomfortable about is that the amount of preventative measures that are being given to all the players and the staff to keep it going versus, what's happening out in general society. But, I mean, I have spoken to someone over there last night, just via text, and they're very comfortable about the way they're being looked after, and they think they'll be fine. But you know, that's not a good sign. And then Michael Slater tried to get out of the country at the last minute, because obviously the travel ban was going in place. He hasn't been able to get back to Australia, so he's got to the Maldives. But he hasn't been able to get any further than that. So it's not a bad place to be stuck.
If you're going to be stuck anywhere,
that's right.
The Maldives
is
rock solid.
Yeah, so that travel ban is in place. I think it is until at least May 15. I think that's
correct.
Yeah, yep. And then they'll be sort of reassessed after that. So, yeah, a bit of a drama going on there. And we know even from an AFL perspective that I don't think it's been made official, but it'll probably be made official today. That Fremantle's game with Brisbane will be moved from Optus Stadium to the Gabba. Now, the AFL are lucky there in the sense that they are scheduled to play each other later in the year. So it's just a clean swap that later in the year Fremantle will host Brisbane. But they're not going to continue to have those sort of convenient swaps that they can do if this continues to be a bit of an issue. And Adam Simpson spoke about it last night. They come to Melbourne to play Hawthorn this week. And there might be a chance that they'll have to stay there rather than actually come home. So we saw that West Coast struggled with that last year in the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season, being away from home, and they kind of, let's be honest, they kind of sulked up a bit, and it reflected on their performances. Hopefully, from an Eagles perspective, that doesn't happen again this year if that happens.
Michael Slater, just on that, he was tweeting yesterday, and he was upset. If our government cared for the safety of Aussies, they would allow us to get home. It's a disgrace. What do you call that? Excitement stick?
Yep.
Exclamation mark. Blood on your hands, PM. How dare you treat us like this? How about you sort out quarantine system? I had government permission to work on the IPL, but I now have government neglect. 2 hours later, he says, and for those who think this is a money exercise, well, forget it. This is what I do for a living, and I have not made a penny having left early. So please stop the abuse and think of the thousands dying in India each day. It's called empathy. If only our government had some. Now, Michael's quite vocal on that yesterday, and he's a prominent member of the media fraternity, so it gets a bit of coverage. But that's a sentiment that's been echoed by all and sundry that are sitting pretty much over there or outside of Australia from the region that can't get back in.
Mm.
It's a fascinating situation. I mean, we're all forced to, well, not we. Key decision makers in the last 18 months, I would hate to have been one of them.
Oh,
trying to work
absolutely.
Out the right thing for all every
absolutely.
Scenario that's been thrust upon them.
Absolutely, yeah.
Off SMS.
Yep.
At Warrnambool, no rain since about 2 a.m. and now blowing a dog off a chain. Fingers
well, that's
crossed,
good news.
Says Scotty. Thank you, Scotty, for the update from the Bull. There's no rain in Bemorm. That's another one that's come through. 75 mils in Ocean Grove with more to come.
75 mils. Geez.
We're talking
nearly 3 inches. Well, that is 3 inches actually.
Just under. So I think 78 is... 78? 3 inches? 2.6?
It's in that 2.5 range.
2.5.
Now, something very exciting happened last night.
What happened? With maths wasn't on, which is good news.
I found my favourite book. My favourite book of all time.
I think I know which book this is, don't I? Do I know this book?
I tried to hide it when I brought it in. But my favourite book...
Oh, you've brought it in?
I brought it in.
It's a physical gesture.
Yep. And I was quite excited because I thought my son James, the second of my sons, would be very interested in this book.
Right.
So I found it and I brought it up to him so he could read it in bed. And he said, I'm not interested in this.
What's that garbage?
I said, what are you talking about? He said, that's olden day stuff. I'm not interested in things that happened back in the 50s and 60s. Now, I had to correct him. It wasn't that. It was a little bit later than that.
A bit 80s.
But he was not interested. Campbell just ate it up, loved it.
Right. What's the book?
The book is the 1981 footy book. The Huttons 1981 footy book.
No, I've never seen that in my
You've
life.
Never seen this before?
I've never seen that in my life.
So, I'm opening the page to page 11.
Opening the...
It is a VFL pen pick on Gary Wilson. And it has a profile on Gary Wilson.
Yes.
Gary Wilson, previous clubs, Preston Swimmers and Powtown. Car, a Datsun 260Z.
Oh, yeah, what a car.
Favourite player? Diplomatically answered, all my Fitzroy teammates.
Oh, fantastic.
Football hero of childhood, Bob Skilton. most difficult opponent. Jeez, Gary, being a bit diplomatic here. They are all tough.
Now they are all tough.
Most memorable match, the 1979 elimination final between Essendon against Essendon, and the 1978 night grand final against North Melbourne. Favourite food? Fish. Just very basic there.
Do you know what? I'm with James.
Favourite drink? Iced water.
Al Del Vecchio and I are hanging out on the back of this.
Likes. Follow my horse, Wilson Adios, which has won at Moonee Valley. There you go.
So, you've got this book, right? The 1981, what's it called? The footy book.
Haven't you ever seen
this
book?
Very simple title.
It's a bright green 1981 Hutton's footy book.
So you've gone to the effort of bringing this in, which I think is very, very special, and I appreciate the gesture. And that's the page you open and read.
Well, no, I just opened it to a page. But there's some very interesting Hutton footy facts. Did you know?
Oh, God.
South Melbourne has the distinction of having had a test cricket captain amongst its ex-players. Now, I did not know this, but Warwick, the big ship Armstrong, captained Australia's test team on the 1921 tour to England. I knew that part. But he was also a footballer with South Melbourne. Now, Keith Miller also played VFL football for St Kilda. And Peter Bedford didn't play cricket for Australia, but played cricket for Victoria and was Brownlow medalist. But I did not know that Warwick, the big ship Armstrong, played football for South Melbourne. You see, this is what this book tells you. I've got so many facts in here. This is months of information for our listeners.
I know what's happening here. I know exactly what you've done here. This is the origin and the source of your five-question Stackhouse quiz. There'll be a quiz question coming up from this.
This is a whole new segment in itself. This is the history of Australian football.
What, in 1981, maybe?
I've got the goal kickers here for the Tasmanian Football League, all the way back to 1945.
Have you just? Who's the biggest name to kick some snags there at the TFL back in the old days? Because race 10, number 3, is coming off the SMS. They want me to read it. Bulldust. That's race 10, number 3 today at the Bull. Bulldust. In the Benchmark 64 affair.
Simon Madden's favourite TV shows are MASH and Get Smart.
I have genuine concern about where the program goes today on the back of this. You've brought the book in. I have no doubt there's quiz questions coming up on the back of it. If you don't know 1981 footy, I suggest you have a rethink.
Gary Dempsey's favourite music, Willie Nelson and Dire Straits.
Oh, God. I'm with James, mate. James and I are on the same page here. Literally.
Michael Turner loves Bundaberg rum.
Who doesn't? Who doesn't? There can be plenty of that going on at the Bull today. Let's get to the world-famous Whitey five-question Vlado Steakhouse quiz. Your chance to win a lunch or dinner for two voucher at Vlado Steakhouse. Melbourne's own world-renowned steakhouse, a family business for nigh on 60 years. It's worth $210, if you don't mind. $210 for the winner of the quiz. Now, no one's ever run the board. No one has ever run the board. It's only five questions. It can't be that hard. But I want today to be the day. So come on, get your thinking caps on and take on our man in his 1981 VFL history quiz today. Whitey, over to you.
Thank you very much for that, Daniel. As you said, terrific prize for grabs this morning, 1-300-652-927. And Daniel from Bundalong South joins us to start things off this morning. Daniel, good morning.
How you going, white man? Half, how you doing?
Good, Dan, good. Are you ready to run the board for us today? Can you do it?
I don't know whether I will, but I'll give it a go.
So let's just confirm where Bundalong is exactly.
Up near Yarrawonga, mate. And, yeah, we've had about 10 mil of rain, but we've had about 30 mil of mice come in the last 24
yes.
hours.
Yes, I've heard about this.
30 mil of what?
Mice. So they've come down from... Have they come down from sort of New South Wales because they've got a massive issue around Dubbo with mice at the moment?
Yeah, mate, and they're around here too, so they're on the march down to Melbourne, lads.
How do you know this, Whitey? How do you know this Dubbo situation with mice?
It's plague proportions sort of stuff around the Dubbo area.
100%, mate, 100%. I was having a shower last night, and one of them just came and had a look. You know,
oh,
pretty bad. They're running around everywhere, man.
Jeez.
No good.
We've actually got a a family residence at Yarrawonga. If I told my wife that there was mice issues in that area, she would not go to Yarrawonga.
Oh, there's no chance.
Your house is probably full of them, man.
Oh, well, there you go.
Well, that's upsetting for many people.
Well, there you go. There's a text here that says that if someone can run the board, they'll get the Hutton's book. There's no chance of getting that.
Good idea.
This is staying in my...
The sooner we get it out of here, the better.
All right, Daniel, let's get going with the quiz this morning. Which star Australian cricketer was dropped from his IPL team over the last few days and, in fact, also stripped of the captaincy of the franchise he plays at? Who is that person?
Oh, boy.
Dan.
Warner.
Yes.
Got there just
well
in
done.
Time. David
well
Warner.
Done.
David Warner.
So is there a bit more to this? Is there something going on?
No.
There's a suggestion there's something more at play here.
I don't know. I don't know. I'd be guessing. So Trevor Bayliss is the coach and Tom Moody's part of that setup as well. So both of them would know David Warner very well. So, no, I don't know.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
Okay, Daniel, question number two for you. Name the Australian who finally won his first MotoGP over the weekend when he won the Spanish MotoGP. Who is that Australian?
Jack Miller.
Jack Thriller Miller. I watched it again last night. I watched the whole thing
I'm sure you did.
It was magnificent.
Was it from this year? Was it from a few years ago?
No, that was a one-time situation. It was a great race. It was a great race from our man, Jim.
All right, Daniel. Question three is the famous voice. Who is this famous voice?
He's put his studs down his foot, and you can see that he had no real intention to the ball. But, hey, I've been wrong lots of times in my life.
Who is that? Coming through on a Skype situation, I believe.
Coming through a bit. Can you give us another go?
Yeah, we'll give you another go.
He's put his studs down his foot, and you can see that he had no real intention to the ball. But, hey, I've been wrong lots of times in my life.
Now, I'm going to give an extra clue there because the audio is not fantastic.
He
has performed extremely well in a grand final.
Is that Norm Smith-Mill sort of well? Or
no. Extremely well in a grand final.
Of recent years, perhaps?
No, not in the last 8 years.
Should we know this voice?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know. Any idea, Dan?
Lenny Hayes.
No, not Lenny Hayes.
Well, that's a good answer because he's performed extremely well in a grand final, although he won a Norm Smith.
Good luck with
the
mice. Hey, how far could mice travel, do you think?
Oh, they've got very powerful legs. They've been in the weight room all summer.
Nick from Bendigo. Good morning, Nick.
Morning, half, Barry.
Any mice issues up there?
Well, not this morning, but I need a wetsuit.
Yeah, that's right. How many mils?
No, I'm not much of a mils person. She's just flooded everywhere.
He's not a millman.
Not a millageman.
Very damp.
All right. Famous voice, we'll play it again for you, Nick.
He's put his studs down his foot, and you can see that he had no real intention to the ball. But, hey, I've been wrong lots of times in my life.
Oh, now I know.
A grand final hero. Who now is it, I Nick?
Know. Oh, grand final hero.
A grand final hero, not AFL.
Yes, it's
not AFL.
Oh, right. I need this voucher too, but it's not going to happen.
Bad luck, Nick. Simon luck, from Nick. North Caulfield on 1300 652 927. Simon, good morning.
Now I know.
Morning, guys. No mice in North Caulfield.
That's a bonus.
Any millage?
No. There's a bit, but I've got no idea how much, but it's wet.
Close enough.
Who is it, Simon? Do you know?
No idea. I don't know. Billy Slater?
No, not Billy Slater.
Well, the grand final. It's not
he has
rules,
performed. So. This particular person has performed extremely well in a grand final. In fact, he actually said he was going to perform extremely well in the particular grand final and subsequently did. Jared. Now, Jared's got so close.
I reckon Jared will know this.
In recent times with his quiz, but hasn't been able to get the voucher. Today's his day. Jared, good morning.
Good morning. How are we, gents?
Good. Yes. We'll play it again for you. Who is it?
He's put his studs down his foot, and you can see that he had no real intention to the ball. But, hey, I've been wrong lots of times in my life.
A grand final hero from a sport other than AFL. Who is it?
I'm going to be wrong for another time in my life, I think, today. I have no clue. Cameron Smith.
No, not Cameron Smith.
We have to change sports.
It's not NRL.
I have to be more round ball.
Brad from Cranbourne. Good morning, Brad.
Boys.
Who is it, Brad?
Is it Archie Thompson?
Very good, Brad. Nice work. Very good. 5 goals against Adelaide in a grand final.
Don't forget his 13 goals against Western Samoa or whoever it was.
American Samoa.
American Samoa. Is there a Western Samoa as well?
Sounds like there. I think there is. But
I'm going to have a look. Stand by.
Okay, you. Brad. This is you got to listen to this question very carefully. This venue used to be called Hisense Arena. It used to be called Vodafone Arena and even the Melbourne Rectangular Stadium. But what is this stadium now called?
Yeah, nah. Sorry, boys.
This is honest. I like this question. Ollie from Frankston. Good morning, Ollie.
Morning, boys.
The stadium, it's down in the sporting precinct in Melbourne. It used to be called Vodafone Arena. Recently, it was called Hisense Arena. It's been renamed after a person. What is the stadium now called?
Oh, boy.
Famous Victorian.
Famous Victorian?
Yep.
No idea, boys.
Bad luck, Ollie. Let's go to Scooter in Eltham. Scooter, good morning.
Where are we?
What's the stadium called? Renamed.
Rod Laver?
No, it's next door, pretty
that's
much.
The big one.
Yeah, that's the big one. Tony from Blackburn, good morning.
Boys, John Cain.
Yes. Very good. John Cain Arena is what it's now called. Now, Tony, this is for the voucher.
$210, lunch or dinner for two, Vlado Steakhouse, Melbourne's own world-renowned steakhouse, a family business for nigh on 60 years for Tone & Co.
Now, we want to get to John Ralph, so we want to get this answer. in 2020, Ash Barty presented the Premiership Cup to Richmond at the Gabba.
She did.
Who presented the Cup to Richmond in 2019?
Cool. Any hints?
No.
Fair kill.
No, this is for the prize.
Get to John Ralph at some stage this morning.
Who presented
Tony
the cap?
Tony.
Who?
Tony Greig.
Tony. No.
Oh, KB. KB.
No, it wasn't
that
KB.
Sounded like Tony Greig. Wasn't KB.
All right.
Although, you're in the ballpark. You're in the sort of wheelhouse of
Spiro
relationship.
Spiro from Burwood. Good morning, Spiro.
Good morning. Good morning.
Who?
Both of you.
Good morning, Spiro.
Who gave the cup? Who presented the cup to Richmond? On the Premiership dice in 2019.
I think it's Francis Burke.
No, it's not Francis Burke. It's not Francis Burke.
St. Francis, no.
A bit of a roulette sort of situation here because we've got a full board of calls. Let's go to Wangaratta and to Mick. Good morning, Mick.
Good morning.
Who is it, Mick? Who presented the Premiership Cup?
Is it Maureen Hafey?
Very good. Well done.
Well done, Mick.
Great job.
It was... the magnificent Maureen Hafey. Well done to you. As a result, you've got a $210 voucher. Lunch or dinner for two at Vallado Steakhouse, Melbourne's own world-renowned steakhouse, a family business for nigh on 60 years. John Ralph from the Herald Sun, all the latest news in the world of footy on a Tuesday morning. Good morning, John.
Hello, gentlemen. I know I look old, but I was officially 18 months old in the 1980 Escort Cup, so I have a terrible memory. So that's no on all counts.
Have you got the 1981 Hutton's footy book?
I don't, no, but I did start supporting the Tigers in 1982 when I was a four-year-old, and I thought it'll be a ride of the lifetime. And as it turned out, they didn't play finals for the next 30 years or barely played finals. So, look, that didn't start well, but it's fair to say it's ended well in the last 4 years.
Righto.
Yes,
that's went in pretty well. You're a very painful supporter for many years until the last 4 years, but you're enjoying the moment, which is fair enough too, Buzz. Hey, Buzz, there's a bit happening in the world of footy. Collingwood are one of the big stories going around, no doubt about that. Pete Ryan's got a story in the back page of the other paper today, The Age, about Jordan Dugowie. Now, the Pies have used up all their other options for sparking him. Is trade whispers the only way they get the best out of Jordan Dugowie?
It's absolutely extraordinary, isn't it? I know we talk a lot about Collingwood, but to think that this is a team that played the semi-final and this, you know, extraordinary story of self-destruction. And so, you know, they sell papers, they do talk back calls, but they are fascinating. Look, we all knew that Jordan Dugowie was the most overrated player in the game. It turns out that Collingwood does as well. I mean, that was a great story by Pete Ryan. And the fact that that story has come out, I think, shows that they've got no other options left, as you say, to spark him up. You know, you try the whispering in his ear. You try the, you know, coach takes him for a walk of Princess Park or anywhere else, you know, the Lexus Centre. You try the players quietly saying to him, hey, mate, we need a little bit more from you. You try the captain saying that in himself. And then you allow that story to come out into the media where Collingwood sources are prepared to say, yeah, absolutely, they've put a bomb under Jordan Goey. You know, I've talked about a range of players who might be traded for them to get, you know, not only draft points in, to be able to get multiple picks. Jordan's the most dangerous qualification in the game. He's that pre-agent. And so, you know, I've always thought, well, you can't trade him because you just use your entire, you know, list management strategy to keep him. But what happens if he just keeps playing, you know, this mediocre football by the end of next year? You know, they finish, I don't know, let's call it eighth next year. And he walks out as a free agent because we all know that he's, you know, quartered himself around. We all know that he loves the cash. And they get, I don't know, pick 12 or 13 for Jordan Goey after 8 years of pretty much minimal output. The only club that I thought made sense was if with GWS, who wasn't able to bring in senior players last year, who has got a lot of kids, you know, who would think to themselves, gee, you bring him in with another reformation project, you know, and Jesse Hogan, you get to play him alongside Toby Green. You know, they've already got Collingwood's first round pick. You know, could they get it back? Yeah, who would have thought that we would ever be getting to a situation to say that Jordan Goey is just never going to be any good? But I mean, the fact that they are putting that story out there, oh, that is desperation stuff from the Collingwood Football Club.
Well, it's interesting, Ralphie, because I must confess, when I read that story from Peter Ryan, I was like, whoa, that's not good if that story is getting out. Now, Taylor Adams has come out quite strongly on social media and saying that it's not true, I think he used the word garbage. And Taylor is obviously the vice captain of the football club and part of the leadership group, but that story doesn't get written if there is talk internally. So that's a concern.
Yeah, and they're shades of grey, aren't they? You know, where you know the senior players, you know, encouraged him quite strongly. You know, didn't throw him out of the boat. Said we're in it as well. But clearly, there are journalists and there are journalists. I think we all know Pete Ryan's reputation in that, you know, he can be not cautious at times. Pete Ryan only writes a story if he's got multiple sources, if he's absolutely 100% true, which he's not throwing stuff out on Twitter that doesn't turn out to be true. So there's always shades of grey in that stuff. And I suppose the thing would be if the Collingwood leaders are not actually telling Jordan Goey to pull his head in or to, you know, lift his output, well, what are they doing as Collingwood leaders? So I'm sure there is some aspect of them telling him to lift. It's just the fact that the story got out, which to me was so significant.
Well, they've put a lot of eggs in the basket of Jordan Goey because they could have traded him or not re-signed him and sort of kept the money for an Adam Treloar or that sort of thing, but they decided that Goey was going to be more important to their future. So, you know, it's in their best interest now that they've really got to get the best out of Jordan because they've invested in him.
Yeah, I spoke to a premiership coach yesterday about talking about other issues, and he said, you know what, how did they stuff this up so badly? He said Adam Treloar would be their best player right now. And I know Jaden Stevenson would not be number two, but he's everything they need in terms of that offensive output, you know, the pace, the versatility. You know, we talked earlier on in the season about them effectively giving up on him. And as he said, yeah, he's gone to North Melbourne. He was half a rat bag for a season, but that's all it was. So, yeah, all the eggs in the Jordan Goey basket. And you think, what if he didn't repay them? What if he didn't stick fat at the end of next year and said, no, I'm a free agent. I'll go and get 5 years at $1.2 million at a club that's absolutely desperate for me. And I walk out having given Collingwood a lot of heartburn and very little offensive output.
Take you down to the world of Casey Fields, where the big skipper of the Melbourne Football Club, Max Gawn, joins us pre-training. Good morning, Max.
Good morning, Half and Whitey. It's beautiful down here. It's actually, there's no rain at all.
There's no, like, sunshine or anything, is there? Because it's dark and overcast here.
It looks like there's about to be a beautiful sunrise over the far side.
Is that right?
Where are you? In another country or in Casey?
Some people do describe Cranbourne as a different country, but no, it's just, it must be coming from the southeast today. The weather must be getting better.
I love the fact you know the directions of the weather. I mean, this is really... I can't work out how to get to my in-laws' place, let alone work out which way the weather's coming.
I'm a Mornington Peninsula boy now. I'm worried about the surf and the tides and...
the moon and all that sort of stuff.
I heard that you may have been at a Mount Eliza football match on the weekend, getting quite caught up in all the emotion. Was that last weekend or the weekend before?
Yeah, I've jumped on board the Sereno coaching staff.
Right.
The Sorrento Sharks. Luke Tapscott is a former Melbourne player. He's captain, coach. Oh, no, he's not captain. He's coach player. So I help out with him. He wanted me to do ruck coach, and I said I'd rather just be an all-round specialist coach. So I'm doing a little bit, but I wasn't on the bench. I was just on the far side, and I got a little bit passionate. It was a goal with 10 seconds to go to win the game for Mount Eliza.
Right. How are the Sharks going, just by the way, though? Because they dropped an early game too, I saw a couple of weeks ago. What's going on there with Taps guys? Has he got the players? Has he lost the players?
They're 2-2, and coaching staff are under the pump.
all positions being reviewed.
All positions are being reviewed.
Well, that's what's happening at Sorrento and the Mighty Sharks, but not so much at the D's. There's no positions being reviewed because 7 from 7 is the perfect start, Max. This is quite a little roll you're on at the moment.
And the 2 from the year before as well. So we're 9 on the trot half. What is it? Melbourne United are 11. So let's see if we can get that. But it was an interesting game down in Tassie. Fly in and fly out. I woke up at 4:30 Blair Gowrie time to be able to get to the airport and get out to Hobart. So it was an interesting day.
Oh god, yeah, 4:30 is not ideal. Now the fly in, fly out. Now it's only an hour down the road, Hobart. So it's not that far. How big a change is it though when you're used to getting somewhere the afternoon before and giving a chance to settle in rather than having to do the get there, play, come home thing?
Yeah, well, we did it a few times last year in the hub, going to Adelaide and Alice Springs and stuff like that. And Cairns, I think we flew in and out. But it was more the timing of the game, because it was a 1 o'clock game. Fly in and fly out, I don't think works for the 1 o'clock game, is my gut feel.
Yep.
I think it needs to be either a later afternoon or a night game, so you can have a bit of time to get your legs moving. I needed a nap. I desperately needed a nap, and there was no time before that 1 o'clock game. You were sort of into it by 10:30. So I don't mind it in terms of how your legs feel. And especially last year, I definitely was okay for those later games.
It's interesting. Interesting.
It was despite the fact that there was a bit of a challenge with the fly in, fly out thing and the 4:30 Blair Gowrie time, which I wasn't aware was different to Melbourne time. was it always going to be a bit of a banana skin game? Hobart's a different place to play. The wind conditions down there, the downhill down breeze thing is always a factor in the games down there. Was it always a bit of a banana skin game? Because it got a bit tight there, Max.
Yeah, credit to North. Their first, I think they kicked the first 3 goals, but their first half was right up there with any sort of halves that we've played this year. They were fierce at the ball. They were super competitive, and their tools were taking marks up forward, and Zeeble was taking marks down back. And we were probably slightly off as well. So half time was addressed, and we were able to come out and play some better footy in the third and fourth quarter. It is an interesting ground. There's a cricket pitch in the middle. There's a fair bit of wind that tends to go down the grandstand end. We've actually had some incredibly close games there, including one freakily close game in 2016 that was 140 to 138, I think. Mm. So it was always going to be, I always knew it was going to be tight, and ended up being about 6 goals, which was more than I thought, but I always had a feeling it was going to be tight.
So what do you do in that situation, Max, where a lot of Melbourne supporters that I know were really nervous about the game on Sunday, and because of the history of Melbourne, do you address that sort of thing around, come on, boys, we can't, this is a banana skin game, you know, we can't take them lightly and all that sort of thing? Or do you not want to kind of address that situation to put a potential negative mindset into the group?
I think all games have a potential to lose, if you know what I mean. Like, I remember being 0-6 in North's position. And your competitiveness and your fierceness goes up every week you lose. So it becomes harder and harder to beat sides that are winless, if that makes sense.
Yep.
And so all games are tough. And we the way we review games, we get on to North pretty early in the week. And we lost a couple of key players just before, well, one during the game in Tomlinson and Jack Maloney just before the game. Which sort of put us back a bit, but I knew it's a ground that creates close football games. I think most games I've ever seen or played in have been close down there, and this was no different.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with you on that. Just we'll get to the Tomlinson situation shortly, but I thought it was interesting the way that while you didn't play particularly well, maybe in the past, you might not have been able to turn it around, but to be able to, within a game, turn around your fortunes and play better football, not panic, stick to your structures and all the sort of the sayings you go with, I think you would have got a lot of confidence out of that. Is that fair?
Yeah, I'll agree with you on that point, Whitey. I do think that half-time, I think it was close to 3 goals, is something that we're potentially not that good at coming back from in our history, but these first 7 games have been challenging all of them. Richmond had that unbelievable start against us. Geelong had a good start against us. Hawthorn was up with us up until three-quarter time. So we've been challenged in every game, and this was no different. Kangaroos were up by 3 goals, I think 4 goals at one point. And we were able to get back to playing some good football. We had Bailey Fritz up forward doing some special things. Cozzy Pickett was doing well, and one ruckman was down on his form, but the other ruckman was on fire. So Luke Jackson was able to help us out as well.
Luke Jackson was very good, but don't worry about the one that was down on form. Perhaps he was just letting the young fella breathe. It's the way I see it, Max. Don't worry about that. I was watching your game, though. You played 97% game time. Is that a normal percentage for you to play?
I think it was actually going into the game, and I was prepared to play a little bit more on the bench with Ben Brown's inclusion. But once Tomo went down and Tommy McDonald went back, it just so happened that we needed probably either me or Jacko in the forward line at all times. So I just didn't go off, I think, in the second half, or I might have come off once in the second half, which could have added to the fact that I was feeling pretty cooked at the end of the game. I actually rated it as one of my hardest games of the year. It was quite tough, and Goldie's a pretty good runner as well. So it was an interesting game for me, but I think it meant Jacko was able to spend some more time on the ground as well, which was obviously good for him.
So in previous years, when that young man hasn't been riding shotgun with you, would you have felt a bit more pressure if things weren't going your way and you're perhaps a little bit off your tucker? You would have put more pressure on yourself to find a way to work harder, to be a better player in the game and have more impact, as opposed to knowing that you've got a very, very capable young man riding shotgun with you who did pick up the pieces for you.
100% half. That's the own maturity I've seen in my own game, and potentially some stuff of leadership coming in. I mean, the Richmond game's a good example. Richmond were genuine pressure in the first 5 minutes, and I fumbled a couple of balls, and normally I would probably go even harder and maybe go outside of our team game plan to be able to make a statement. But I put Luke Jackson in the ruck at about the 3 minute mark, because I felt myself being off the game, and I think I was being harmful to the team. So I put Luke in, and this was similar this week. There was a moment in the third quarter when Jacko was playing some super footy. I just sat a full forward for 10 minutes. I didn't touch the ball as well, but I just saw Luke playing some really good football. We were winning clearances, and it was just a good ability to give him a really good run of it.
Has he surprised you with his development this year? Because I've watched him a couple of times up close, and I've seen him in live a few times when watching you guys, and he is something else. But I imagine you guys had a fair opinion of him, working with him day to day in the last couple of years.
Yeah, his athleticism and the way he can move and all that was really noticeable as soon as he got to the club. He says he was an under-18 Australian basketballer or something like that, but mind you, I think that's on every kid's resume. These days. The Australian under-18 team, I think, is about 300 deep. So he's got that in him, and then he's also just learning the game really, really quickly. And he's not looking... I remember when I was probably 18, 19 as a ruck, I'd probably get pushed around in the ruck, but he's definitely not looking like that. So the only other player I can think of that's had that sort of impact from a young age was definitely Brody Grundy. He came in as a 19-year-old, incredibly strong, and being able to move as well. So he's probably more in that mould. But his ability to go forward is what's putting him is what's allowing us to play two genuine rucks.
Yeah, we've been speaking a fair bit about Luke in the last few weeks because of what you just said. His versatility. I'm still not sure exactly what he'll end up as a player because of his mobility. I mean, he had a dozen disposals in the third quarter. They're midfield numbers, and he moves like a midfielder, and he has skills like a midfielder.
Yeah, we're almost completely different players. So I probably focus a lot on my marking, where he focuses on being in that third and fourth chain and making sure we're able to get clearances. And it's handy for Goody to have two different styles of ruckman. Even the way we jump at centre bounce is different. The way we compete at boundary throw-ins is different. So we're very different players. He's got mannerisms of a midfielder, the way he moves.
Yep.
So I agree. I'll be pushing, especially if he keeps playing like this in the ruck, I'll be pushing for him to be a midfielder. But I dare say that he could be a Mr. Fix-It, like a Mark Blitzarves type role, yep, if we need it. But he also could be an oversized midfielder maybe down the track as well.
Hunter Clark is not a middle-aged man. He's a young man going places in a hurry for the Saints, and he's been good enough to join us on a Tuesday morning on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Hunter.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Good on you, buddy. Nice to have you with us. Now, back on track, the Saints on the weekend in a big way. I was there watching that game live, and it was some sort of performance from you boys against the Hawks. What turned around? What was different on the weekend?
Yeah, we had a, obviously needed a good win, so that was pretty good to get one. I'm not too sure, really. Like, we kind of played okay against Port. We just had our first and last quarters were all right. We probably played the way we wanted to then, so we kind of just went over that, which was kind of just win a contest. Get the ball in quick to our key forwards. Helped having Paddy back, because we've got Big Row and Maxi down there, so it takes a bit of the pressure off Maxi, and then Skunk as well. So having that extra target really helped. And we just played for each other, and able to win in the end.
Yeah, well, it's just every facet of the game you dominated, really. Paddy Wright, the impact of Paddy now, and what it does structurally for you. We know that obviously he's been out for a long time, and Rowan Marshall was the main man in charge of the centre bounces and the contest work around the ground. What does it do for you to have Paddy back into the team?
Oh, heaps. He's one of the best ruckmen in the comp, so it just gives our mids a lot of opportunity just to get damaging, and there's not really many ruckmen who can tap the ball like he does, so... and then at the same time, puts Rowe or him down forward, so it gives us three pretty big targets that it's pretty hard to stop if you're an opposing team.
Hunter, were you worried about how you were going? And I'm not talking about you personally, but the team, just the dramatic inconsistencies of what's going on. What's it been like internally?
Not really worried, to be honest. We know we can play good footy. Just obviously, it's been a pretty tough start to the year, but it's only round six or seven, so we know that we've still got a lot of time to make up for. So, I wouldn't say we were worried. We're more disappointed with how we're going, but we got a lot of time now to turn it around.
And I must confess that I'm rapt that I'm talking to you because you're one of my favourite players to watch. And I'm interested for you to share with us the role you're playing, because you're kind of sort of half back and then coming through the wing and then getting forward. You kicked a brilliant goal, one of the best goals of the season on Saturday night. Explain a little bit about the role you're playing at the moment for the Saints.
I'm playing a few different roles, kind of week to week, just what the team needs in a way. I think through the first few rounds, I was playing a fair bit inside and then went to half back a bit. On the weekend, I was more wing and forward. So it's more, what the team needs. And I think, I'm able to provide that flexibility. So, it was good getting up around the ball on the weekend, and nice to get on the end of a couple.
Yeah, absolutely. So, what role would you like to play? I know that you can never necessarily get exactly what you want, but particularly with Brad Crouch coming into the midfield, Zach Jones back playing again, do you like the versatility, or would you like to ultimately be that inside mid and racking up the possessions every week and helping your team win?
I'm not sure really. I think ideally I'd want to play in the mid, but just wherever I can fill a hole at the moment. We've got some pretty good experienced players through there at the moment. I'm still getting my opportunities through there each week, but I really enjoyed the wing and up forward on the weekend, which I haven't really done a lot at AFL level. So, hopefully can do that for a few weeks and see how it goes.
Let's touch base with Rodney Ead, our Tuesday specialist in the Coach's Corner on the Breakfast Club. He's back again after a big weekend of footy. Good morning, Rockets.
Morning, Daniel. How are you going?
Going very well, thank you. Going very well indeed. Is your favourite food still seafood?
Seafood? Well, you just look at an old one when I was playing or something, isn't it?
The 1981. What's it called, Whitey? 1981 footy book?
It is the 1981 Hutton's footy book.
And it says in here, the player's profile, that your favourite food is seafood and your favourite drink is beer.
Now, that's changed. beer's not anymore. I was pretty basic in those days. Seafood is still up there. That's still on the podium anyway.
And that you were a computer programmer.
Yes, that caught my attention too.
In the 1980s.
I used to work in computers for Dunlop. I became Dunlop Olympic. Worked there for 12 years while I was playing. And then when I moved to Brisbane, ended up being full-time in footy from then on. So, I was in the computer industry, very early stages of it, that's for sure.
So please describe to us, Rocket, hard rock. What's hard rock? Because that's your favourite music.
Oh, God, why are we going on this? Can we talk footy? Move on.
I want to know what happened to the Toyota Corona. That's what I want to know.
That's wrapped around a pole.
Well, thankfully you're okay, Rocket. That's the good news.
No, it's okay.
On the back of that. Now, tell us, while we get to footy and stop wrapping things around poles, the Melbourne Footy Club at the moment, kind of talked about Melbourne and how they approach the rest of their season. We had just had Max Gorn on not long ago after their win over the Kangaroos Sunday in Hobart. They're 7-0. They're perfect start. They're now top of the table and everyone's talking about them. What happens inside? How does Simon Goodwin manage this, Rocket? Is there a secret to managing a team on a run, particularly one that has had challenges over the previous couple of years, or do you just let it roll?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? You certainly don't want to try and upset the apple cart and make it too complicated and invent things that aren't there, as in trying to improve. But you've got to look for ways, because what's going to happen, teams will be really going to homework on them, or doing a lot of homework on them. So if they don't tweak things along the way, they could get caught out. Having a loss along the way is not going to hurt them either. Now, they need, I would think, from a psychological point of view and certainly a coaching point of view, a loss along the way is going to be beneficial to them. They probably should win the next three, so they'll probably be 10-0, which is a great start, but there's still a long way to go. Other teams will be improving. They'll be keeping, as I said, doing the homework on them, trying to pull them apart. Certainly from the weekend, their first half was pretty ordinary, to be honest. And I think it was a good sign they were able to click into gear in the second half and lift their intensity. But if they were playing a good side or a better side, they probably wouldn't have been able to do that. So there's still some areas of they need to work on. But I think it's more about the theme needs to be consistent. I suppose getting back to that, the coach's words have got to be consistent. Don't say a loss is coming. Don't say, we've got to keep our feet grounded. It's about looking for ways to get better. Work hard on the training track, because you can get into the situation that players can get comfortable, and that's going to be a really bad thing if they did that.
Now, Stewie Jew's a big fan of the program. He listens most mornings. So what would you say to him if you were going to coach against Melbourne this week for the Gold Coast Suns? Sorry, they're playing...
Sydney.
They're playing Sydney on... John Longmire loves the program too, funnily enough.
No, they're playing St Kilda.
Who are?
Because they... The
Gold Coast. Yeah, Gold Coast are playing St Kilda. Sydney are playing Melbourne. That's right. Yeah, I've got that.
Sydney playing Melbourne. Sorry. Yeah.
Sorry, John Longmire loves the program. Sorry, I got that wrong. What would you do? What would you say to Horse about coaching against Melbourne this week?
Well, I thought North Melbourne sort of had a reasonable plan last week. They denied them the ball. They spread the ground big, kept off them, and when they could, they went through the corridor. I think that's when you have the ball. I think you've really got to up your pressure. And North did that. Melbourne weren't on song as such. But the way Sydney played the first few weeks, and they beat Richmond and they beat Brisbane, that's what they've got to bring. They've got to be able to have their skills up, be able to keep the ball off Melbourne, because Melbourne on turnover generally have been pretty good. We've got Petraka and they've got some speed off half-back. Obviously Pickett's a terrific young player. And they need to be competitive in the ruck. Hickey needs to be able to try and nullify Gorn, because he can be a real, I suppose, catalyst for the team to be able to direct the ball where he wants to. But, no, I'd certainly give Sydney a chance. I'd certainly give them a chance. I thought they had a bit of a slump there for 2 or 3 weeks, which they looked tired, their kids. They've rested a few kids, dropped a couple, get them back in and forth where they needed to do. But they probably didn't deserve to win last week, but that'll give them a bit of confidence.
And also the confidence of learning from the past. We had Luke Parker on yesterday, and he was talking about, it's almost like it was still haunting them, that late stoppage goal to the Giants that cost them the victory in that close game a couple of weeks ago, that in a close game this time round, they're able to do a few things better because of what they learned. That must give not only John Longmire a lot of confidence, but the players, that they're actually learning from their mistakes, with what is ultimately a young team.
Yeah, that's right. It's a very young side. And actually, when you make mistakes and it costs you games, or you do play poorly, it's be able to take the learnings out of that. Now, real trick is when you win games and you probably don't deserve it, masks over some cracks, and if you don't address them, they'll catch up with you. And so, and that comes back to Melbourne. Now, there's some cracks last week. They need to learn from that. Even though they won the game, they can't just put that in its basket and say, oh, that's just a bad day for the first half and we weren't on song. But there were some areas of concern. So they need to talk about that and address that. But from Sydney's point of view, yeah, I think it's a... I think they hung in there very well. They're able to take their chances. So if they can recapture their early form as far as their use of the ball, I think they can certainly get through Melbourne's defence.
Okay, Collingwood, what are they going to do, or what can they do? I mean, based on what we saw against the Suns on Saturday, which just seemed to be such a spiritless kind of performance. It looks like that group is shot. Now, I'm not saying they are, but that's what it looked like on Saturday. What can Nathan Buckley do now? How does he salvage things?
It's a good point, because generally, even if they lose games, they're generally really competitive.
Yeah, absolutely.
They don't get beaten by a lot. Not that they got beaten by a lot at the weekend, but they did look listless, as you said, especially at the start. Their first half was really average. If I was in charge of Collingwood, and I don't mean the coach, I think the club, and in turn, they don't have to say it publicly, but I think they've got to make a decision now which direction they're going, and then be able to tell Nathan Buckley and the coaches, this is where we're at. Is it a rebuild? Is it a reset? Is it we still chance for finals? Whatever it is, they need to be able to, on the back of some information from coaches and other people. And then Nathan can set the path along from the direction from the club. So if they still think they're a finals chance, well, he's got to try something to engender some enthusiasm. And I think you've got to change, and learn from experience, whether it's the old go to the pub and have a drink and just have a chat, 10-pin polling, whatever that those other people have done at times. But change the environment. You can't just coach the same way because you're saying the same things. There's only so many ways you can say the same things, as Alan Jeans used to say, cooking the sausages. So it's just same old. You need to spark it up. And it mightn't just be footy. It might just get that circuit breaker. But if it's going to be a rebuild and it's going to be a reset and the club need to own that, well, Nathan, just play more kids and away we go, and then you might sell that publicly. So I think it's really coming from the top. But if they need to, and they probably should win this week. If they don't win this week, well, the wagons will be circling, won't they?
Yep.
But they need to, I think, just have a bit of a circuit breaker, because he's probably obviously coaching. I'm saying coaching well is not the right phrase, because the results are so, but his voice, his message will be good. Training will be okay. It's now being able to, the mindset of the players and where they're at.
Dean Vickerman is the coach of Melbourne United, and they are hot to trot, as they might say in the classics. 11 in a row. Coach, good morning.
Good morning.
11 in a row is a nice number. How do you approach games or windows of time throughout the fixture of the NBL season? Do you do 4-week blocks? Do you take the game in front of you? How do you approach the calendar from a coaching perspective?
Yeah, it's always, you know, it's been different. You know, I used to kind of go in kind of, you know, the quarter season blocks, and then, you know, review and look at that. And can you get, you know, 5 out of those 7 of those games? this season's so different, you know, and it's ever changing. So you can't kind of plan to say, let's look at this 3-week block, because you, again, we may not be able to go to Perth next week, or something may happen. So this one's been so much just look at your nose and look at what's right in front of you.
Can it be a positive for you from a coaching perspective, and probably the players too, that it does keep you on edge a bit? Like, it doesn't matter how well or how poorly it's going, that because of the changes that can happen just with the world we live in, that you've always got to be on edge, which keeps you pretty sharp, or is it taxing?
You know, I think that was a great lesson for us at the start when we got stuck in Cairns for a month, and it was a good introduction to what this season was going to be about, and just being able to deal with that. And as the season's gone along, everybody's had their little patch of having to deal with it and having to be away from home. And I think we were fortunate just to get it right at the start.
How are you feeling about it, old Dean? I mean, we've spoken to you a number of times over a number of years, but this year going into the season with the players that you brought in, you're always going to be up there. Is it going as well as you'd thought it would be? Is it going better? How would you sort of feel things are at the moment?
Yeah, you know, there was so much uncertainty for me as well. You know, moving Mitch, you know, to exclusively our point guard, where we've had an import point guard before, how was that going to work out? You know, well supported by Shea Illy. You know, we didn't really know what we were going to get out of Bubba. You know, bringing two rookies in and Jack White and Mason Pinkling, how were they going to fit into our roster? Sam McDaniels, Joe Akul, were they going to elevate their game? So, you know, when I had all those questions at the start of the year, and you look at it right now and say, wow, you know, all those guys have possibly been, you know, better than I could have hoped. So, you know, we're in a really good place right now, and Joe playing fantastic basketball. You know, we get Jock back again tomorrow, and so, you know, how do we work that back into the roster? And so, yeah, really, really, really pleasing, and some good problems to have as a coach.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because it's easy to say, oh, well, you've just got lots of good players, that's why you're near the top, but they've all got a gel. So what has been some of the secrets to that success of getting them gelling? Is it the leadership of Chris Golding, or have there been other things that have happened to get you all playing so well as a team so quickly?
Yeah, I think everyone's, you know, once they kind of found their role and saw, you know, if there was an injury, what was going to be the next phase of their role, what else could they contribute to the team? And, you know, I think we've really found that with Scotty Hobson at the moment. So, you know, we're really using him as something similar to what Mitch McCarron did for us, to say, if we need you at point guard, if we need you at power forward, if we need you to score, you know, we're going to ask you to do all these things. And so I think everyone's, you know, developed in their role and understanding, you know, where it can also be elevated to if needed.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.